and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. In this series, we're exploring how fintechs can help tackle climate change and what can be done to address AI bias. I'm Helen Driver, founder of MoneyReady, a financial education platform and a former fund manager. In this episode, we're exploring what embedded or contextual finance means for the future of banking. As more and more non-financial companies offer embedded finance, how is this revolution in financial services shaking up the banking sector? Joining me are Ritesh Agarwal, a partner at McKinsey, Angus Ross, Senior Vice President, Banking as a Service and Technology Alliances at Finastra, and Josh Williams, Executive Vice President, Chief Banking Officer and Head of Partnerships at Seattle Bank. Hello and welcome. Let's start with the introductions. If you could all briefly just tell me a little bit about your roles, starting with you, Angus, at Finastra.
Thanks, Helen. Great to be here with the audience. So, Angus Ross, I lead Banking as a Service, go-to-market for Finastra. I've been here for just over 6 months to really spearhead the change that we're seeing across open banking or open finance. So, good to be here.
Welcome. And Ritesh, over to you.
Hello, I'm a partner with McKinsey, and I spend a lot of my time with financial institutions trying to solve a variety of their problems related to technology.
Thank you. And last but by no means least, Josh.
Thanks so much, Helen. Josh Williams, Head of Partnerships for Seattle Bank, and in that capacity, working with fintechs, marketplaces, and brands that want to embed financial services in their customer experience.
Can we begin with a look at the terminology? What's the difference between embedded and contextual finance, and what does banking as a service mean? Ritesh, do you want to start with that particular question?
So for me, contextual finance is where you have customers or a group of customers who are offered services tailored to their particular circumstances and needs, and you do need in-depth knowledge of the customer. Now, embedded finance for me, it's a subset of contextual finance, where the products and services are embedded in the customer journeys of the distributors, and the provider brand may not be exposed to the customer directly. And I think it provides a lot of value to all the participants as well, because end customers get a more frictionless experience, distributors get higher revenue and customer stickiness, and providers get access to whole new distribution channels and higher revenues.
Josh, what about you? How do you sort of interpret the terminology?
Yeah, I would agree with Ritesh. And I think maybe the other element of that then is thinking about banking as a service is just a new way of looking at how the ecosystem is organized to support the outcome of more embedded or more contextualized banking services. So essentially, looking at the fact that there are more modular components of how these financial services are brought to bear and arranged, and really banking as a service just means a new way of getting there.
Great. And Angus, is there anything else that you would add to this understanding of what these different terms mean?
No, I would agree with Ritesh and Josh. We see it as a spectrum between open banking, embedded finance, and contextual finance. So simply put, open banking is actually opening up a bank's financial products and services to be able to be embedded. Embedded is actually connecting those products and services into a captive point of consumption. However, it doesn't focus on the context or the point of consumption. And then contextual finance is actually taking what's embedded and making sure it's extremely relevant and valuable to the end consumer. So it does focus on actually the consumption of embedded finance. And then banking as a service, as Josh said, underpins all of that, right? Whether it's a bank through an enabler into a distributor getting its products and services consumed, or a bank through enabler to another bank who doesn't want to manufacture that product anymore to distribute to its own customers or to its third-party customers. So we use open finance or open banking, embedded finance, contextual finance, and banking as a service on a continuum.
And what does embedded or contextual finance mean for the future of banks? And what's the ultimate impact on customers, or what's the benefit for customers? Josh, perhaps you'd like to start.
Yeah, sure. I think for customers, it's primarily meaning that they're seeing more options and more variety of financial services, but they're also seeing them in ways that are more close to them or personal to them. And the buy now, pay later space is a great example of that. But I think over time, some of the excitement about it is the fact that in addition to just being a matter of increased convenience or preference, this has a whole new way of distributing financial services, which is going to help improve overall financial inclusion and access to important financial tools and resources. So from a customer standpoint, I think it's hard to overstate how this can really help essentially democratize a lot of financial services. On the banking side, I think in the near term, it's no doubt this is creating more competition for some of the incumbent players, but also creating huge opportunities for tech-forward, nimble partners who see opportunities to work in different partnerships and take advantage of really new sets of economics that can come from that and participate in a different way.
Great. And Ritesh, how do you see this impacting on the banks that you are working with and advising?
I would agree with what Josh was suggesting. I do want to bring one point forward, that when you look at larger banks versus the regionals or the small banks, there is a bifurcation that we see now. Larger banks, because they're large, spend a lot of money on technology and whatnot, they're able to capture a larger slice of the pie. But for the smaller banks, it will become more about protecting their markets, because larger banks can really access untapped markets and distribution channels now. And hence, in my view, they will be at a relative advantage as compared to smaller banks.
I would just add to that. I think there's no question the large banks, in terms of just having more access to resources, is always going to be a strength. But I think one of the things that's interesting about how essentially banking as a service and embedded finance is changing the market is it really does set up some new economic factors. So for example, if a bank partners with a brand, the brand is really driving down the cost of acquisition that would have traditionally been a barrier. If they're leveraging technology in new ways, that really decreases the cost to serve. And just because technology can now be developed at a lower cost, it means some of those upfront costs are both smaller. And that allows just a different risk profile and return profile of going into any market. But what we're also seeing is it's opening up markets that previously would have just been too small of a niche to sustain a viable business, now are becoming really powerful opportunities. So I think it is creating, you know, important opportunities and really represents a unique opportunity for smaller financial institutions.
Are you seeing similar trends, Angus, in the clients that you're working with at Finastra?
Oh, totally. And I knew Josh would jump in on the back of the comment that Ritesh made. And I actually agree, right? There are a lot of the majors actually look for bilateral or exclusive relationships in the endpoints of distribution. And a lot of those captives aren't looking for a single bank to provide product and service to their customers. They're looking for choice. And so one, I think it's anyone can contest it. I think the differential will be pricing and speed or agility. And a lot of the smaller organizations definitely, I would say, have the trump card in pace and agility to respond to this need. So I think anyone can contest it, whether they're small regionals or whether they're large universals.
While I agree with Josh and Angus, I fully agree with the points that this is also a big opportunity for the regions and the smaller banks. I think the important point here is that larger banks, given that they have larger spend, larger resources at their disposal versus the smaller banks, what would it take for the smaller banks to really capture this opportunity? What kind of help do they need from outside to capture this opportunity? Because if you look at their overall tech spending, talent profile that they have, there's a big slope that they have to travel, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, look at Goldman buying GreenSky, right? Now, what differentiated Goldman there was the balance sheet to make the acquisition and equally the agility to start to work and build out that ecosystem. Separately, I know that we've been working with Seattle, and I would say the technology lift or the budget lift to work with them to expose their capabilities, I would say is actually a lighter lift than if we're working with one of the majors, not just because of the stack that we've built with them, but equally, again, it's all relative to your size and how much incremental market share that you want to go after. So I think there's obviously nuances. Josh?
Yeah, well, I agree, Ritesh, absolutely. The point is not that this evolution to more embedded or contextual finance is going to make it easier for all small banks. But I think the point is that, you know, where historically economies of scale accrued to physical distribution, that clearly has shifted to digital distribution. embedded finances and banking as a service is now allowing those sort of that digital distribution to be put together in along new connections and partnerships. And so that's where for a select and unique few, I think, of small organizations, size doesn't have to be a barrier to entry, but then clearly having the right technology, the right partnership, the right vision is still going to be essential to realize that. And I don't think that's going to come easily to anybody, but it absolutely is a very different framework than having to have the prospect of just competing on physical distribution or not.
If you think of a captive point of context like Walmart, for example, 1,000 banks aren't going to provide products and services into Walmart. They're going to go for a handful of banks, whatever that number is, it may be 20. So I think the opportunity for a bank, whether you're universal or a major regional or a small regional, is to be one of those 10 or 20. I think that's the opportunity that players should be going after. And the first ones in there presenting a compelling proposition will be the ones that win that space.
And turning that question of opportunity back to Josh, actually, what opportunities do you see from embedded contextual finance at Seattle Bank?
Yeah, we're seeing opportunities to access new markets, deliver new products. And essentially, it's by leveraging the fact that on the technology side, you know, we have a cloud-based open API core. So that enables us to work with more modern and quick-to-market product developments, but also make sure that those are supported by both an operating model and a team that can manage the risk and the regulatory factors of now providing financial services. So with that foundation, what we're seeing is lots of interest, both from established fintechs that maybe you find that their original go-to-market tech stack is now running into issues in terms of functional capability or meeting the regulatory posture, or marketplaces and brands that now want to embed financial services, but frankly, don't actually want to be fintechs, despite, I think, a lot of the media hype that every brand wants to be a fintech. I think what we find is that, you know, it's one thing to pay for somebody's cup of coffee. It's another thing to move somebody's rent or their life savings. And I think brands are starting to recognize they actually don't want to have the full responsibility for that and don't want to have to meet the full regulatory framework of that. So if somebody can come in and bring not just that financial solution that can be embedded and can be contextually relevant, but then on top of that is ensuring that you have the right enterprise great protections behind it, that I think starts to be really compelling. And that's where we're seeing significant opportunities.
You're listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. Please rate, review, and subscribe through your usual podcast app. I'd like to widen the conversation out to sort of banking ecosystems more broadly. And Ritesh, I'd be interested, how do you see embedded and contextual finance and banking as a service changing banking ecosystems on a global basis?
I would say that the entire ecosystem is getting disrupted because of contextual or embedded finance and banking as a service, right? Be it front-end, middle office, or the back office or technology, everything is getting disrupted. But if I have to pick one of those, I would say the biggest change is going to be with the front office of the banks. The role of sales and marketing department, for example, will change, because distributors now interact with the customers. And I think, Josh, you mentioned about digital distribution. This is tied to that point. Everybody is on an equal footing now. The traditional sales and marketing model needs to change. You also have to create new partnerships, exactly what you are trying to do, Josh. Role of digital will also change because you are embedding the products in the customer journeys of distributors that you cannot control. So there is a lot of disruption that's happening in the entire ecosystem.
Does anybody else want to come in on how they see these changes sort of manifesting in the banco ecosystem globally?
Angus might speak to what Finastra is seeing. I know they have a global presence, but I would just say I do think that the insight that Ritesh shares around really thinking through how that customer journey is going to be mediated while meeting the necessary components of the financial service can't be overstated, right? I think most of us, when we're a consumer, we just want to like swipe the card and get the good, or sign the loan and get the car or the house. There's a reason that innovation has been slow in financial services. Not unlike healthcare, there's a high degree of complexity, high stakes, and high regulation for good reason. And integrating all those elements are complicated. And so I do think that point of really trying to think through how are you going to manage that, I think that looks much more like partnership and close alignment. I don't think it works well for more of a utility or commodity-based sort of pick as you go. And so I think that's absolutely right. It's really going to mean a very different way of looking at how you interact with the client and how you partner closely with your trusted sources to get that done.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. And if I answered this question first, I equally would have highlighted who owns and helps support the customer experience first. Because I know banks have created whole industries around human-centered design and customer experience within their own channels. And now they don't own that point of context. Conversely, the points of distribution haven't focused on providing banking products into their points of context before. So who's going to advise them on what is a relevant and valuable financial offering in a point of context that banking isn't prime? It could be you're booking short-term accommodation through an accommodation platform, or you're doing a trade finance trade on an ERP. Who's going to influence what is relevant to those end customers that doesn't try to spam them with financial services in a non-financial context? I think that's really important. I think the only other one I would add is if you just look at some of the major technology companies, the major distributors, and even the major banks, what role they play in the future is going to change. The conversations we're having with Josh at Seattle isn't just about them as a financial services license holder that wants to just sell product. Their interest, and Josh, you can probably speak to it better than I can, to be a broader banking as a service player across the continuum is stretching. Equally, a distributor doesn't just want to sell retail products, they want to embed financial services. And then embedders, whether it's Stripe or a Chime or someone else, everyone's sort of redefining what their own borders are. And so I think that's important to realize it's not going to be a static environment, if ever, or going to be for a long time at least.
You've all identified partnerships as a key critical factor in success. What other factors do you think are important, and who do you see as the winners and the losers in this move to embedded and contextual finance? Angus, perhaps I can start with you.
Gosh, I'd say first mover definitely has to have an advantage, right? And when in the market, we're dealing with banks, we're dealing with other fintechs to partner with us as enablers, and equally spending a lot of time in market with those endpoints of consumption. And I guess the recurring theme is it's not about just embedding a bank product into an open cloud-based ecosystem if no one's going to consume it. We really have to focus on who the end customer is, whether they're a retail customer, a small to medium business, or a corporate. What is relevant and contextual for them? And then back into that, start with the end customer and the point of consumption and something that's very relevant for them, but equally make it scalable, right? Don't spend the next 12 months just trying to get into one channel and then have it completely redefine that as a subsequent effort. So start with the customer, start with something that's very, really relevant for them, but then pace and agility and being nimble and just getting started versus overthinking it is a close second.
Ritesh, do you want to come in? What do you think the key factors are for success in this changing world?
So when we talk about partnerships between distributors, enablers, and providers, it is not something that you can just change on a daily basis, because building a partnership can be very, very costly, right? So you have to be very careful about which are the partners you want to partner with, who are the providers and the enablers you want to partner with. And based on at least what I'm hearing from some of my clients is that, one, they want ease of integration with the different partners. They don't want a partner where you have to spend a lot of time and effort in integrating your customer journeys with their solutions. Second, it has to be highly secure. And number three, they do want some optionality of the products and services or configuration so that they can provide all of those to their end customers. So I would say these three, four are the factors that at least I'm hearing from my clients.
Yeah, I think, when in doubt, quote Einstein, right? Einstein said, everything should be as simple as possible, but no simpler. And I think that's a great way of thinking about this. You know, the first round of real strong innovation, I think, as you think about in this banking as a service enabled innovation, really was led by fintechs that were primarily focusing on single products, right? So maybe that's Chime in the retail banking or SoFi or buy now, pay later. Now, as those customer or as those businesses look to offer more functionality, as Ritesh just said, you know, the recognition is that that actually requires a different architecture and the way that it worked to get them up to speed and really do amazing things in terms of their ability to move markets in those single lines is really changing. So I think up from the upfront, thinking through what is the tech stack to support that. But I think what we also see in so many cases of where there may be ideas of financial innovation, oftentimes what it really reflects is a great feature, but not necessarily something that is a viable business. And so that's where I think in order to have that durable partnership, it really does require that you come in understanding both the economics in terms of from a financial standpoint and also to how to manage the risks around that. Because if you get down the road and either a regulator puts a dead end up, and we've seen some of that in some of the leading brands, or if you run into the case where you now can't offer that next logical step in the customer journey, that's going to be a problem from an enterprise value standpoint. And so that's where we really think those partnerships need at the outset to have an appreciation for those factors and really being able to balance both the innovation with that essentially customer safety and the sort of long-term viability of what the customer life cycle is going to look like.
Just to round out that one, so I'd be saying follow customer demand, and that's changing, right? It's going from one product to a suite of offerings. And then most importantly, where the market opportunity is off the back of that, is it sizable and contestable given your niche? And then lastly, even though we're, let's say, at best 12 months into a true BaaS market play, there's lots of learnings to be had, right? So don't repeat the failures of early players. Learn from what's been happening in the market. Equally, look beyond the borders. If you look at Asia Pac, especially Northeast Asia, there's game-changing movements around ecosystems there that the Americas and Europe can learn from.
And bringing it back to you, Josh, what does success look like for you at Seattle Bank?
Yeah, success for us will be seeing that our partners are able to drive new value to their customers, and that through that, you know, as Angus just alluded to, that does need to drive sort of a market or a product and economics that can really allow both sides of the partnership to really continue invest and grow in that approach. So, yeah, I think we're really looking for ultimately see value to the customer and see that the partners develop strong businesses in support of that.
Ritesh, would you like to add something?
If I talk about my banking and the insurance clients, success for them would be how they can increase their distribution footprint through banking as a service, through more number of partnerships, and perhaps move into newer segments around SMB segment or the corporate segment, and also expand in products outside payments and lending. I think that would be quite interesting over the next few years.
And does that mirror what you're seeing at Finastra, Angus, with your clients?
Yeah, totally. Look, we're in an interesting position because we sit right between providers and endpoints of distribution. And we can only be successful if they're successful. We're actually the recipient of their success. So we're not going to have any success with providers if they're not going to get incremental business or incremental and profitable business out of embedding financial capabilities. Equally, in our discussions with distributors, this isn't their day job. And so they want to understand what the value proposition for embedded finance is for them in their context with their customers. And they'll only be interested in it for two reasons. One, if it actually adds to stickiness and increase in adoption for their existing core customer. And I would say definitely secondary, not as a major, if there's a profitable revenue stream that doesn't dilute the first one. And so making money out of embedded finance for the distributors is a secondary consideration at the moment that we're seeing. And so our job is definitely to try to accelerate the providers getting into those captive points of distribution and articulating the compelling proposition for those points of distribution.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. It's been a really interesting discussion, and I'm sure the listeners are now very clear on the differences between embedded and contextual finance, banking and as a service. So thank you all.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks so much.
That was Ritesh Agarwal of McKinsey, Finastra's Angus Ross, and Josh Williams from Seattle Bank. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, have a listen to the other episodes in this series. We're exploring how fintechs can help tackle climate change and what can be done to address AI bias. And do please rate, review and subscribe through your usual podcast app. I'm Helen Driver. Thanks for listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open. Brought to you by Finastra.